This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are things that matter a lot that are not tangibly measurable, if you will. They're not tangible things. Okay, before we get to the Olympics, before we get to sports, this is all about sports. Do you know in my family, not that we do everything right as a family by any stretch, but do you know in my house, wife, two kids, when we have dinner, maybe we're sitting down at the counter having dinner, maybe we're going out to Red Lobster, it's a fancy night, there are no phones. Now, everybody has a cell phone in my house, myself included. And look, we're not Amish. We get on our phones. Everyone has social media. Everyone has people they text, people they talk to. Everyone in my home will be on their phones from time to time throughout the day. But not at dinner. Not when we're having a family dinner. Why? What difference does that make? Why? Well, it's a time, anytime, it's a time where we put our phones down. We're not connected to the outside world anymore. No friends, no girlfriends, no work, no school, just each other. It is a unifying moment for our family where we're just together as a family. It's just us four. There is no one else. And it matters. My kids talk about it. It matters. It's a moment that matters. Now, it doesn't show up on the bank statement. You can't read it. There's nothing tangible in it, but it's powerful. Sports. I grew up playing sports very poorly, watching sports like most red-blooded American males. Football, basketball, baseball, these things. I only played baseball and basketball, but I watched all the sports. My friends and I gathered together watching Sports Center after school back when it wasn't, you know, gay, race, communism all day long. But what sports are for any society of any size, there's something. It's family dinner. It's something, no matter what else is going on. Worldwide, domestically, economically, no matter what else is going on, it's something that gives us something to rally around. It is a unifying moment where it's just us. And this is why you can go to the tiniest backwater tribe. They never even discovered the wheel. They had sports of some kind. To the hugest, most powerful countries on the planet, us. The Roman Empire, they had sports. They had professional sports. In the Roman Empire, everybody knows about gladiators, of course, but you know what was even bigger than gladiators was chariot racing. Everyone's seen the movie Ben-Hur, chariot racing. They were big on chariot racing. What many people do not understand was there were professional teams. They went by colors. So you had the red team. All you guys rooted for the red team, and we were rooting for the blue team. And it was a moment, no matter what else was going on in Rome, emperors and assassinations and wars and disasters and the Vandals are at the gates. We can come together on whatever day they played. I'm not sure which day of the week. May have been every day. Whatever day they play, we come together and I'll put on my red jersey and you put on your red jersey and we're going to go, we're going to cheer. Now, did the chariot race matter? No. Bunch of dudes running around. Hopefully nobody gets hurt. Does that exact thing matter? No. But what does matter is unity. A moment of cohesion for a society where people come together. Hockey. We just won the gold medal, which we'll get to in a moment. But everyone remembers, or at least you've heard of, the Miracle on Ice. 1980 United States men's hockey team defeats the Russians. The unstoppable Russians who never lost. Everyone has heard of the Miracle on Ice. Maybe you watched the movie Miracle. Excellent movie, by the way. I highly recommend it. Watch it with your children. Why do we... 1980... It's 46 years ago. Why do we still talk about that? What? It's one hockey game. It wasn't even the title game. Did you know that? We still talk about that. Why? One hockey game. It was a moment for the entire country to come together. The Republican, Democrat, tall, short, fat, black, white, but didn't matter. A moment for the country to cheer for America, to come together. And those moments, like family dinner, are powerful. This is why we have lamented, I myself have lamented the commification, if you will. I don't know if that's a word, I just came up with it. The commification of sports in general. You have a bunch of brain-dead commie athletes, brain-dead commie journalists, brain-dead commies running sports leagues. Now you have to tune into the NFL and hear Spanish halftime shows, and racism is painted in the end zone. LeBron James uses every chance he gets to spout his stupid commie garbage. You can't even watch the women's gymnastics team without Simone Biles running her fat commie mouth about something she knows nothing about. Now, why does that matter? Who cares? It's gymnastics. I don't even watch gymnastics. Who cares? It's the NFL. Who cares? It's the NBA. It's just basketball. Well, in a vacuum, yeah, it's just basketball. It's just gymnastics. But in reality, you know what you're doing? You know what the commies did? And they did it on purpose, by the way. You brought a phone to family dinner. You took that moment where we're supposed to be sitting around. How was your day? I love you. Hey, should we read a Bible verse? Hey, we have this coming up next week. Hey, did you do your homework? You took that moment where the family is together, should be together, and you know what you did? You ruined it. That's why I have lamented the loss of sports cohesion in this country, because I'm old enough at the ripe old age of 44 to remember when it was not that way. It was just America. And credit to the United States men's hockey team, not just for beating those dirty Canadians. I'm kidding, I love Canada, but not just for beating those dirty Canadians and winning the gold medal. I applaud them because afterwards. Now, Jack Hughes, let's pause for a moment. I don't know anything about Jack Hughes. You know that? Nothing. I don't watch professional hockey. I love going to hockey games. I should note, going to a hockey game in person, peak sports. I've never thought it was very good on TV, but in person, it's amazing. But Jack Hughes, I couldn't tell you what team he plays for. I don't know anything about who he voted for. I don't know anything about his family life. I know nothing. And you know what? I don't need to know anything, because after a huge moment, game-winning overtime goal to bring the gold medal to the United States of America, this is what I got to hear from my Olympic athlete.
This is all about our country right now. I love the USA. I love my teammates. It's unbelievable. The USA Hockey Brotherhood is so strong. And we have so much support from ex-players. I'm so proud to be American today.
This was such an incredible game to grind out. I mean, you're bleeding right through it just looking at you right now. Can you just talk about how difficult this gold medal was to win?
Unbelievable game by Hellebuck. He was our best player tonight by a mile. Unbelievable game. Unreal game by our team. That's just a ballsy, gutsy win. That's American hockey right there. That's a great Canadian team, but we're USA. We're so proud to be Americans. Tonight was all for the country.
What does this gold medal mean to USA hockey?
It's everything. Like I said, the USA Hockey Brotherhood means so much. Look at these guys. We're such a team. We've been together for 2 weeks. We're such a team. The USA Hockey Brotherhood is so strong, and we're so proud to win for our country.
I was in Tucson, Arizona yesterday during that hockey game. It was my wife, University of Arizona. They had a big gymnastics reunion. She was a gymnast for University of Arizona back in the day. They had a big reunion. Anyway, I was in Tucson, Arizona. We weren't flying out till yesterday afternoon. And so we were out during the hockey game while the hockey game was about to start. And you should have seen it. You know, we walk into a breakfast place with the intention of eating. We want to watch the game. And it was a college town, so there's bars. The bars are all open at 6, 7 a.m. and they were all packed, and everybody, red, white, and blue, American flags everywhere. You're getting your hash browns over the chants of USA, USA. Why? It's just a hockey game. It's just sports. No, it's family dinner. Sports is family dinner. It's why you should loudly reject the commodification of American sports, and rest assured the communists did not infect American sports by accident. They did it on purpose because they knew what I just told you is true. It does matter. It does bring us together for a moment, for 2 hours, 3 hours, the Olympics, the Super Bowl, the whatever it may be. We can all sit beside each other and cheer and hug and cry, and as Americans, a unifying moment. It's beautiful, and don't ever accept the communists trying to take that from us, because that's why they want to take it. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now let me ask you about something. How much do you pay a month for your cell phone service? There are a million reasons to switch to Pure Talk. They hire Americans. When you call them, you'll speak to an American who speaks English. They have a Vietnam veteran, two tours, who runs the company. There are a million reasons to switch to Pure Talk. But maybe you're just a money guy or a money girl. When I switched from T-Mobile, we have four lines, my bill got cut in half. Sound like a good reason to switch? Go to puretalk.com/jessetv and switch. It's time to make the switch. Save some cash. Average family saves $1,000 a year. We'll be back.
The Somali pirates who ransacked Minnesota remind us that there are large parts of the world where bribery, corruption, and lawlessness are the norm, not the exception. Importing these cultures through unrestricted immigration and open borders brings those problems right here to the USA, and it is the American people who pay the price in higher medical bills, car insurance rates, rent, taxes, and perhaps most importantly, crime. We will take care of this problem. We're going to take care of this problem. We are not playing games.
Panning to Ilhan Omar when talking about Somali pirates was just fantastic. I'm sure Savannah Hernandez enjoyed it. Joining me now, contributor to Turning Point USA, Savannah Hernandez, who's, I've got to warn you right now before we even start talking to her, you're probably going to be hesitant to get on the highway when we get done discussing her new reporting. But Savannah, okay, Somali pirates, you've been out and about places like Ohio. Why don't you just tell us what you found?
Sure, Jesse. So first off, I wasn't expecting to run into the problem of the worst Somali drivers I've ever seen in my life on the streets of Columbus, Ohio, but I guess that's just America in 2026. But essentially, and the reason why I'm here today is because I have a brand new documentary dropping, because I asked the question, how are illegal immigrants able to drive 80,000-pound semi-trucks on our streets? And I was asking this question because in Austin, we had a horrific crash in which an Eritrean truck driver who was driving for Amazon, crashed into stopped traffic. He ended up killing five, including a four-year-old and a child. And we've seen this continue to happen again and again and again all across the United States of America. This just happened in Indiana a couple weeks ago. You had four Amish men that were killed by an illegal immigrant who was driving a semi-truck and should not have been. How did this happen? I've done this investigation, Jesse, and it's insane because back in 2016, of course, under the Obama administration, you had those English language proficiency rules that were relaxed that basically opened up our highways much more easily to a lot of these migrants who shouldn't be on the road to begin with. But then it was during COVID-19 and this push of a trucker shortage and fear surrounding a trucker shortage that opened the floodgates, and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA for short, started relaxing all of these regulations that allowed migrants to get on our streets. And I wanted to give that quick history because what I found were straight up CDL schools in which you have an entire TikTok page of hundreds of videos of migrants speaking in different languages, advertising CDL programs to migrants in different countries. Now, this is happening quite largely in the Somali community, with the Punjabi community, with the Russians, the Uzbekis. And again, going back to that initial question, how are migrants driving 80,000 pound semis on our highways? I thought that I was going to get a simple answer. And what I unveiled was a web of fraud so vast that my story here barely even covers the surface. Now, when I went to Columbus, I tracked down a lot of the trucking companies that many of these migrants are being hired by. And the trucking companies are fraudulent, Jesse. So basically, the way that the DOT works is anybody can open a trucking company, and the FMCSA sometimes is not conducting the new entrant audit for these trucking companies for up to 2 years. That means you have trucking companies that are operating. And hey, maybe they're legitimate, maybe they're not. And the FMCSA is really not checking in or auditing that. And that's how things have been run for the last 10 years. Now, the video report you're playing on screen right now has to do with a company called SOS Trucking. And my researcher and I found this video because the drivers for this company were speaking Somali. They were on the highways talking about how they were driving from Dallas to Ohio. And they were talking about all the racism that Somali truck drivers face because there's English barriers there. Now, this company itself got over $618,000 in PPP loans during COVID-19. If viewers remember what was going on with that, you had PPP loans that were being handed out to small businesses to help them during COVID-19. And there was a lot of fraud via these trucking companies that were tied to that. So this company had a loan that was issued for trucking. Their other loan was issued for food service contracting. That made no sense. And then I found another trucking company in Ohio just to, again, highlight how insane all of this is for your audience. This company, Jesse, was opened in March. Just 3 months later, they had three trucks that they said that they had. There was no activity tied to those trucks. Despite that, they got $314,000 in our taxpayer-funded money via a PPP loan. And guess what happened, Jesse? The FMCSA came to conduct that new entrant audit to say, hey, can you prove to us that you're legitimate? They refused to do it. We don't know the status of that loan. So that is the very short and summarized version of, again, what's happening in Ohio. And by the way, Jesse, Ohio is one part of the nation that this is happening in. We have seen these non-domiciled CDLs handed out to illegal immigrants, particularly from California, New York, Texas, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and you now have the current DOT that is really trying to get this under control and trying to get this issue solved. But we have 200,000 non-domiciled CDLs that have been handed out, and I can't remember if I explained it or not, but basically, the CDLs that regular Americans get are not the same that migrants get, and migrants get that non-domiciled CDL, basically meaning they're not residents of the United States of America.
Okay, is there a, I have so many follow-up questions I want to ask here. The non-domiciled versus domiciled, is there a difference in the testing? Essentially, what I want to know, Sav, because I don't understand this, surely you have to take a test, right? You got to back up, you have to take a test.
Sure, Jesse. And first off, shameless plug here, please go watch my documentary because it's going to explain it and show it way more in depth than I'm going to say right now. But thank you for asking this question, because basically the FMCSA told CDL schools that they could self-certify. So basically, at one point in the nation, you had about 2,100 CDL schools that were legitimate. After the FMCSA passed this, I want to say it was in 2022, guess what happened? You then had 32,000 CDL schools that were created because they didn't have to say, hey, let's follow up with the government. Let's get inspections. Let's have somebody come from the government to confirm that we are a legitimate school. That was also coupled with the fact that the FMCSA then decided to allow these CDL schools to utilize third-party testing, meaning that you could go to the school and then they'd give you a certificate that you would take to the DMV and then you would get your CDL. So the web of fraud that's happening here that I figured out, Jesse, was that basically, you have migrant trucking companies that would sponsor migrants from other countries to bring them over here legally, or they would just cross over into the country illegally. They would bring them over and then they would put them through a migrant CDL school. They would fast track them for a CDL. They would give them that certificate. They would go get that non-domiciled CDL. Then they would go work for a migrant trucking company. Now, the fraud doesn't stop there, because guess what, Jesse? These trucking companies sometimes were exploiting the migrants they brought over and said, oh, you're going to work extra hours, even if it's illegal. illegal. That's why a lot of times these migrant truckers are falling asleep behind the wheel. Or again, they did not undergo the proper training, so they have no idea how to operate this semi-truck, and they're getting into horrific crashes in which we have five-year-olds that are getting, brutally hurt in these violent crashes that are happening across the nation. So that's how they are getting trained or not being trained, I would say. And the DOT really trying to crack down on these CDL mills. That's what they're called. But keep in mind, these are happening across the nation. And the one that you have on screen right now is operating as we speak. I posted about them last week. They took down their entire TikTok page. So they know what they're doing, but they do have a verifiable on the ground in Ohio trucking school that they are running people out of.
Okay. Last question, because I want people to go see the documentary, and you can plug away at that thing and let people know where to do it. But did you get some sense as to what they're trucking? Basically, I want to know who's hiring these people. What are they hauling back and forth?
Sure, Jesse. Another great question. So essentially, this is, again, going back to the fraud, right? That's our favorite word for this interview. What's happening is oftentimes the freight that is being moved by a migrant trucking company. And that migrant trucking company is sometimes taking that freight and then selling it on the black market and taking goods here in the United States and sending it back overseas. So that's something that's happening as well. And I'm going to be honest with you, Jesse, the web stretched so far that I only touched the CDL mills. But like I said, just in this small portion of it, you have the migrant truck owners who are exploiting the migrant truck drivers, and they, oh, by the way, are working for half of what an American trucker would, which is why the trucking industry has completely collapsed.
Where do people see this documentary, Sav?
Go on X at Frontlines TPUSA. It will be posted there later today, and then follow my X account, Sav Says, because the full 30-minute doc that's going to explain this and show you guys everything way better than I just did will be up there.
All right. Imagine a truck driver more dangerous than an Asian woman. Sav, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Your gut. You know, they say, and they're not wrong, that that's where your health starts and stops, right? Your gut. So last summer, I was having all kinds of stomach problems. I would eat something. Sometimes my stomach would be upset. And the worst, acid reflux, heartburn, it's terrible. Talking to my sister. She's one of these health people. And she says, hey, have you ever tried cowboy colostrum? I didn't even know what colostrum was. And I kind of rolled my eyes as she told me, hey, I had fixed all my gut problems. It's amazing. It's amazing. All right. I'll try it. It's amazing. I put a couple scoops in my coffee in the morning. I have the chocolate. They have vanilla and strawberry and everything. It's delicious. It's absolutely delicious. But I put a couple scoops in my coffee in the morning. Since I started, I haven't had acid reflux one time. No gut problems. None of those aches. Nothing. Try it. You're going to love it. CowboyColostrum.com. Just use the code JesseTV. So let's have a discussion about patriotism and why it actually matters. You know, there's that old Fairly Crappy Beatles song, Love Is All You Need. It's not always true, but the basics behind the song, the premise behind the song, it is true. You know, if you love your job, if you love what you do, maybe you don't have a natural talent for it, maybe there's a lot of things you have to learn, but you love what you do, you'll get better at it over time, and you'll almost undoubtedly be a success. The love being the ingredient in there will kind of drive everything else. Your marriage, if you have one. Maybe finances will hit hard. Maybe health problems. Maybe kid problems. Maybe all kinds of things happen. But if you love each other, you'll get through that, weather that storm. Now, vice versa. What if the love isn't there? You know, what if you're uniquely talented at your job? You just happen to be really good at it. You don't like it. In fact, kind of hate it. You hate the job, you hate the company. It really doesn't matter how talented you are. You're not going to end up being a success. Your marriage, know, she's so pretty, he's so handsome, money's coming in, kids are doing good, straight A's, got a fresh new, brand new SUV in the driveway, life is good, right? But kind of hate each other, it's not going to last. You won't make it. It is a necessary ingredient for the success of anything. And it most definitely is for the success of a nation. A nation must have its citizens love it. It absolutely must. Without that, the nation is on a short-term future. That is just the ugly truth. A poll just came out from Gallup. It showed patriotism from 2001 till now. Okay, so a little more than 20 years, 25 years. Quarter century of patriotism. Of course, it's not really surprising. Democrats were always a little lower than Republicans. But Barack Obama leaves office. We now are in a situation where 36% of Democrats are proud to be an American. So Republicans, for all the problems they may have, and most definitely do have, Republican voters in general are proud to be Americans, love the country. And Democrat voters, overwhelmingly, we're not talking about a tiny majority here, overwhelmingly, Democrats despise the United States of America. Now, let's get past all the other things. Well, of course, I already knew that. Let's get past all that and let's drill down on this. How long do you think we can last like this? And no, I'm not telling you there's going to be a civil war tomorrow or something like that, or the country's going to collapse next year. I'm not saying that at all. But let's think on a macro level, because you're going to die one day, and so am I. Our children will have children and their children. We do like to consider them, right? 100 years from now, we don't even have to go distant future. That's a century. 100 years from now, are we still going to be here like this? If Democrats hate the United States of America, if half the country hates the country, can you keep being a country? I would argue you cannot. I would argue this is a national crisis that exceeds maybe any national crisis we've ever seen in the United States of America, ever. And look, we're going to have Megyn Kelly on in a few minutes. And I ask her about, you know, what she thinks is the why. There are obviously so many different ingredients to this, from education to the media and Hollywood. And there's a spiritual element to it. Americans stopped going to church. And look, if we have to give credit, bad credit, but credit where credit is due, we should point to the Obamas. You know, we've had many presidents in the history of this country, some wonderful, some patriotic, some very bad and horrible, but Barack Obama and his wife, they were the first ones who ever walked into the White House who really had a genuine hatred for the place. That was how they were raised. That was their entire background. And they spent 8 years taking an axe to this country. I mean, this was the first lady?
For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country. And not just because Barack has done well, but because I think people are hungry for change.
Think about that statement. Educated woman, a career. She was never proud to be an American until America chose her husband. What a statement. Still out there trashing it to this day. And you know what? I actually want to give credit to Jake Tapper for maybe saying something that was so incredibly revealing when he dropped this. Why is it Democrats hate the country? Here it was.
Going back 9 years, I'm thinking back to when I covered Obama at the White House, and President Obama gave a speech one time criticizing Paul Ryan's Medicaid plan or Medicare plan. Paul Ryan was he was chairman of the House Budget Committee, and he was in the audience, and Obama was criticizing his plan. And you would have thought that he killed his puppy.
No, but that's from what I'm the reaction. Saying. It's like it's totally different.
Well, here's my question: are we ever going back to normal? Are we ever coming back to a place where you can't just call the other party crazy in the State of the Union address?
Are we ever going back? These people want you to imagine that we can go back to a wonderful time where we were all very, very unified, except what do they mean by that? They don't mean unifying. They don't mean stop the division. They mean your subjugation. That's what they mean when they talk like that. When you were forced to bend the knee, when you had to sit there and listen to vile crap like this. Remember when Joe Biden said this to you?
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. No matter what the white supremacists and the extremists say.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
And by the way, if they want to think to take on government if we get out of line, which they're talking again about, well, guess what? They need F-15s. They don't need a rifle.
Our patience is wearing thin with you. I've got F-15s. What do people like Jake Tapper mean when they say they want to go back? Well, for them, real joy, real America, is when you are completely powerless, constantly threatened and lectured by them, when they have complete and total control to tear this country apart the way they want, then we are united. It's a wonderful time to be together. But anytime they're not free to run the communist revolution, then you're being divisive. It's a very, very, very evil, manipulative tactic that evil, manipulative people use. You've probably seen this in your office at some point in time. God forbid you've been in a relationship like this at some point in your life. The nastiest, most divisive people, one of their favorite tactics in the world is accusing you of being divisive. But back to the question at hand. How do we continue on for another 100 years when half the country's trying to burn it down? If I share a home with my wife and she wants to burn the house to the ground, can I stop her for a while? Hopefully, you know, I'll follow her around with a fire extinguisher. I'll be patting out the curtains. I can probably keep the home upright for a while, but 50 years from now, is our home still going to be standing? That's probably not realistic. I'm not sure, and I'm going to ask Megyn Kelly in a second, but I'm not sure how exactly we got here. There's a lot to it, I realize that. But what I am 100% sure of is we will not have a long-term future as a country if half the country, if Democrats continue to hate it. We just can't live like that as a nation. Joining me now, the incredible Megyn Kelly, which of course everybody knows Megyn Kelly by this point in time on the Megyn Kelly channel, the Megyn Kelly show. She's just everywhere and we are a better people for it. Megyn, okay, Gallup poll comes out, shows Democrats started to hate the country about the second Donald Trump got elected. We now have a 36% problem, as in only 36% of Democrats love the country. Megyn, maybe a long answer. How did we get here?
I mean, it explains a lot, but I would start at schools. I mean, that's, they've been made to hate the country from very early ages for decades now. And it was mostly in the universities for a while, and now it has spread to K through 12 education as well. And I think, unlike Republicans, there's no counter-programming in Democrat homes anymore. You know, it used to be that you'd learn to love the country through your parents, and even the Democrats would take you to church where that message would be reinforced, and their commercials would reinforce it, and the sporting activities would reinforce it. And, you know, you just lived in America and you learned to love it because it was sort of a ubiquitous message. I think that stopped a long time ago. And I think the right will continue to reinforce it at home, making sure the kids celebrate 4th of July and stand up for the national anthem and honor their country as they should. And the left doesn't, because they bought into the lie that America is uniquely bad instead of uniquely good. And they're taking some sort of pleasure in the division that comes from that. They feel like there's meaning in their little lives that otherwise are meaningless to them. At least they've got a cause now, which is to tear down like the evil government or this evil place that didn't allow them to succeed in the way that they should have or they wanted to. as opposed to taking personal responsibility, which is another right-wing conservative value, not so much on the left. And here we are. And by the way, you know, I remember being on the air at Fox News 2012, 2014, talking about what was happening in the university, saying that this has to stop. We used to call it political correctness back then. It has to stop. You know, like if this spreads, it's going to be a real cancer on our society. And look where we are. Just, you know, some 15 years later, not even 10, whatever. It has spread. It's gotten really pernicious, and it's eaten an entire generation of young people on the left.
Megan, two questions, almost the same one, but where did we fail? When I say we, I'm talking about me, hardcore partisan right-wingers. Where did we fail in stopping this? Did we fail? Where did we fail? And do we have any ability to correct it? Because I'm not a Democrat. I'm not going to vote Democrat. I'm not going to be a university professor. I don't even have the intelligence for that. Where did we fail, and can we fix it? Or are we banking on these nutballs fixing themselves?
I think, honestly, we failed in pursuing, you know, with all due respect to George W. Bush, George W. Bush-like Republicanism when we were in charge for too many years, where we were neo-conny and we were Chamber of Commerce people and we were talking about an immigration overhaul that might include amnesty, and we wanted to be liked by the other side. We wanted to create a bunch of wars that killed a bunch of people, but we wanted to be liked by the other side, and we didn't engage on these cultural battles. The Republicans engaged on the issue of life. That was it. And kind of ceded everything else, just and like tisked the so-called culture wars as beneath them, and therefore lost them. It's one of the reasons why Donald Trump was so popular when he first came on the national scene. Like, what is this? You know, like my exchange with him at that presidential debate on like, you've said the things about women. And he was like, I think people are sick of how politically correct we've gotten, was his answer. You know, what I say is what I say. And it was a new dawn in the Republican Party and in the country. And we are very, very late to this party. You know, I mean, this party's almost over. And the booze is gone, people are stoned out of their minds, and they're all kind of wasted to the point where their brains aren't functioning normally. So it's going to be tough to get those paddles out and revive them, but we must at least try. So I think what we're doing now is the right prescription. You know, we are out there fighting the culture wars. We are no longer ceding them. We're fighting in the schools. We're filing lawsuits to try to undo some of the trans mania that they sneaked in. We are fighting on the cultural front when it comes to love of country. We're fighting when it comes to religion. We're reminding people that having a connection to something greater than yourself is actually not only good for you, but it's part of the prescription for the country when it's ailing. We're shaming people who try to shame us over our flag and our patriotism. You know, and we're teaching our kids to do it too. Like, we're trying to inoculate our kids now before they go off to school, which is important so they know what battles to fight. And we've made it kind of cool to be right wing, to be a lover of country. That was a big hurdle too. Because before we were just doing self-flagellation, like we're sorry, we're Republican, we're right wing, but we're sorry about it. You know, like it's really just because of taxes. And now we've learned these people are animals. Like we actually have to fight every single battle in every single possible way we can, whether it's in the church and in the pews, but in the courts and in the court of public opinion as well. Like everywhere, we have to say all the things we've been secretly thinking so that everybody knows they're not alone and that it is a battle and we need every last man and woman.
Megan, Donald Trump had a wonderful speech on Tuesday night. I know this because my wife, who's much more of a normie, not a political geek like I am, loved it. She doesn't even really care about that stuff. She said, ah, it was great. It was great. It was patriotic. He had a great night. Does that translate? And conversely, Democrats had a bad night. They can't help themselves. Does that translate to midterm elections, which aren't until November, and as you well know, we all have an attention span about that big anymore?
I don't think so. Unfortunately, no. I think it may have stopped the bleeding for Trump because his poll numbers were really dramatically heading in the wrong direction as he went into the State of the Union. So he got out there and reminded people that he's actually very funny, very likable, kind of lovable. I mean, the TDSers will never see it, but I think if you're like a normie independent, you're like, you know what, I do like him. So that was good for the president, just to get out there and remind you like why you voted for him if you're an independent. But really, the only thing that's going to save the Republicans in the midterms is the economy. That's it. Like, you look at those polls on Tuesday, there is only one thing voters care about, and it's their wallet. And everything else is a distant second, third, fourth, whatever. It was like the economy in double digits, you know, high 40s or 50s. And the next closest thing was immigration at 13%. Crimes, not even registering. Foreign policy, not even on the dial. So there's only one way Trump can save and help the Republicans save themselves, and that is people have got to feel that there's an economic turnaround. You know, like, it's very hard to do with these the inflation Trump inherited in the grocery stores and, you know, the, sort of these bread and butter issues. He's trying. The tariffs, you know, it's a mixed bag. It's possible that if he stops with the tariffs, people might feel some short-term a short-term bomb that might bring Republicans over the edge. But I don't know. I think sort of the script has been written, and I'd be shocked if we see anything other than a bloodbath in November.
Yeah, I sadly don't disagree with you. Where do we go from there? They're not going to have the Senate. We all know they're going to freak, and it'll be a new impeachment thing every day. But we're not passing legislation now either. It's not that I want it to happen, but is it the end of the world?
Totally agree with you. No, it's not. I've been asking that same question. Like, I know it's not great. We're going to have investigations all the time. Not for nothing, but as a news person, that's kind of interesting. but I digress. That we are going to have not just Trump impeached, but every cabinet member will be impeached. It won't go anywhere because the trial takes place in the Senate, and there will never be a conviction with a Republican control. But yeah, there'll be no legislation passed whatsoever and no attempt to pass legislation. So it's going to be a stymieing of what's left of President Trump's agenda. It's going to be annoying. There'll be zero chance for bipartisan compromise and any legislation. And so Trump will continue ruling by executive action. His critics would say fiat. And sadly, that's been one of the complaints many of us have had about the Trump reign so far, which is, as much as we love those executive orders, and I can't think of one I disagree with, they're going to be erased just as soon as the next person takes office, if it's a Dem. So we might only have 2 years left of not transing the kids anymore and not building the disgusting windmills on every ocean, ruining the skyline and killing the whales and dumping toxins into the water, you know, just to pick a couple, not to mention opening up the energy capabilities of the United States so that it's drill, baby, drill, and we actually are self-sufficient and the gas prices are under $2 in places. I don't know. It's kind of depressing to think about, but it was always foretold, because let me tell you something, Jesse. As much as we may like Trump on the right, it's not that we don't criticize him. I've heard you criticize him. I've criticized him too. But it's as much as we net really love Trump. He is divisive, and people get sick of him. So independents, who they're not calling themselves Republicans for a reason. You know, they're not really hard partisans. They're sick of thinking about Trump. He takes up a lot of the oxygen in the nation. And so we saw this at the end of his first term, too. Like, while he was doing fine before COVID hit, once COVID hit, they were ready to move on from him, like, jiffy quick. And it couldn't have been because they entirely blamed Trump for COVID. It was just they saw him on the TV every day. They were reminded that Trump needs nonstop attention. And, like, they got sick of thinking about their president, I think. And so I think Republicans are going to be up against that for the next couple of years, and we should not be assuming anything about 2028 as a result of this.
It's amazing how fast that's coming. Megan, thank you for everything. As always, you're the best. Appreciate you. I hate when big companies collaborate with each other to smash smaller companies. Not that I have anything in particular against big companies, but when big banks collaborate with these huge Fortune 500 companies and they just kind of exchange capital and they freeze out the little guy, it bothers me. It bothers me a lot. Maybe it's because my parents ran a small business for so many years. That's what Cardiff is here for. Cardiff is here for small businesses, giving them access to capital and giving them access quickly. We're talking same day. We're talking up to 500 grand in a day. Small businesses need capital. I gotta make payroll. I need this. I need that. And you're tired beating your head against the wall, calling these gigantic banks who don't even want to take your calls. Stop calling them. Cardiff is where you go. Cardiff.co/Jesse. Find out what they can and will do for you and your small business. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And we had to play you at least one of these. It was such a great night for honoring heroes last night. And one in particular, a Royce Williams, 100 years old, a naval aviator. And, I mean, the moment speaks for itself.
Tonight we've celebrated many truly extraordinary American patriots, but there is one last living legend to honor before we go. He is one more heroic American aviator. Navy fighter pilot Royce Williams served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, flying more than 220 missions. In disguise over Korea in 1952, Royce was in the dogfight of a lifetime, legendary dogfight, flying through blizzard conditions. His squadron was ambushed by seven Soviet fighter planes. It was his first aerial combat of the war, and despite being massively outnumbered and outgunned, Royce led the takedown of four enemy jets and almost destroyed the others, vanquishing his adversaries while taking 263 bullets to his own plane and being seriously hurt. His story was secret for over 50 years. He didn't even want to tell his wife, but the legend grew and grew. But tonight, at 100 years old, this brave Navy captain is finally getting the recognition he deserves. He was a legend long before this evening. Royce, please stand up, and I will ask the First Lady of the United States to present Captain Royce Williams with his Congressional Medal of Honor.
Took on seven planes by himself, shot down four. He had to leave because he ran out of ammo. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.